This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
It's Thursday. I am Nate Bauer. I am joined by Sean Fitz today. There is snow on the ground. I'm bundled up. We've got a lot of show for you. There's a mailbag to address as well as a new coaching hire. This is the Blue White Illustrated Daily Edition. What's going on, Fitz?
Not much. You look nice and cozy over there.
Oh, I am. It's frigid. There's snow on the ground. It's miserable. Wake me up when it's golf season. Are we ready? Can we golf?
I think we're ready. You mentioned a new coaching hire. I think this is the third podcast I've done this week on the new coaching hire. So it's like, you know, recent coaching hire, I would say, in Marcus Haggins coming to Penn State. Really the most and only noteworthy news of the week from Penn State football. Of course, coach is still out on the road. They'll have a junior day this weekend. Ryan will get to that tomorrow and preview that junior day. But we're here to talk mailbag. We're also here to talk a little bit about Haggins. And I think this is the first time you and I have gotten face to face to talk about all this. So I guess, what are your thoughts on this coming back at you?
Yeah, why do I have to start? I think he's, I have a few different jumping off points, but I'll combine them all into one. I think that when you combine the Taylor Stubblefield dismissal, right, with this hire, it is not an in your face, like, slam dunk. This is an over the top win for Penn State. I think it is a chance to be better. And so, like, that's the underlying philosophy here is, there were areas that were lacking with Taylor Stubblefield that could have been better. Not to say that it was bad with Taylor Stubblefield, but there was an area in the program in recruiting, certainly, as well as on the field in development, where James Franklin saw an opportunity that he felt to get better in the program. And he brought this guy in, and he brings a lot of credentials with him that suggest, he really fits the mold of what Penn State is looking for. How about you?
I would agree with that. And I would say everybody that I've talked to about Haggins, like, they're in mourning at Virginia right now because that's a terrible way to put it because of everything that happened. That was not what I was getting at there. But because he left, he was such an integral part of that program, tying the past to the present and potentially the future as well. The fact that he's left has some people devastated. I mean, this is, I was trying to think of a parallel here at Penn State, and I'm thinking Terry Smith, because Terry obviously was a good player here, came back and did everything there. But, like, I think this is beyond that in terms of the scale of the University of Virginia losing Marcus Haggins, just because everyone loved the dude. Like, just absolutely everybody that you talk to cannot say enough great things about him. And I keep going back to this when I'm thinking recruiting, when I'm thinking development, when we're thinking some of these questions in the mailbag. It's Virginia. Virginia is going to play into a lot of this. He doesn't have a sparkling recruiting closing record, but he was also at the University of Virginia going against schools that would get those recruits that, you know, he wanted to get, those top guys. I mentioned Cam Seldon the other day. Penn State was in the top three with Virginia, Tennessee, and Penn State, with those other two schools. They ended up going to Tennessee, but Virginia was a big player. Guys like that really, really like Marcus Haggins, but maybe didn't give them a chance to close because it's the University of Virginia. Yeah. In terms of personality, like, the more that I talk to people that have been around him, the better I feel about his potential to be a recruiter here, a magnetic recruiter here. And that's, I think that's exciting for Penn State. And just as a person, this is a guy that, doesn't come onto the market very often in terms of a personality. And I think that that's the thing to take away from this. Like, these people are, I don't want to say distraught, but these people are really, really taking that breakup hard because he was so ingrained in that culture down there over multiple staffs. So I think that that's what I take away from it. And I think that that's a really good thing for Penn State moving forward. The results haven't been there. A lot of that because it's been Virginia on the field recruiting, things like that. But I think the potential for results, as you said, a little bit higher at his next stop at Penn State.
And let's be honest, the results haven't been there now, right? Like the results haven't been there previously over the last three cycles, I think is, I think that's fair, right? I mean, I don't think that's being overly harsh. I just think it's very clear that there is an opening, a window for Penn State to get better recruiting at that position, recruiting in general, from that position on the staff. And just like you said, I remember when Phil Troutwine came into Penn State's program, and the first time that he addressed the media, he talked about the difference of being able to walk into a high school with a Penn State logo on his chest, right? It's just, if you have the ingredients as a person, which unanimously, like,
everybody loves this dude.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's like overwhelming. You.
We don't know why, but they just love this dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, he's so well liked. He's so well respected. I think that there is evidence of him being able to develop on the field, right? He's had some guys not to the level of necessarily like Jahan Dotson, right? But not necessarily the level of Parker Washington, but give him the right ingredients, give him better prospects to begin with. And I think that there's certainly a well-founded optimism there that he'll be able to develop that room at a position and at a time when it's very, very important. I mean, there's so much wrapped into what happens at that position for the program's success over the next 2 years.
Yeah, they need that immediately. And that's something, it's really funny thinking back to the initial 6 hours after the hire, after the story broke on Monday morning. You felt good about his technical ability and you were questioning his recruiting ability. The more I hear, I feel fine with his recruiting ability because I think he's going to be able to relate to these guys. I think he's going to be able to have these relationships. Maybe the Taylor Stubblefield did not have. The technician part of it, that's where he's going to make his money, like right off the bat. Like he's got talent in there, in that room. They've got the potential to come back and, with Keandre Lambert Smith can he can nail down a starting job. Trey Wallace is in there. You got Malik McLean on campus for the spring. So there's things to work with, Caden Saunders. But he's going to have to get into that. And I don't want to say I've flip-flopped on my feelings on this, but I think his development's going to be under scrutiny, and I don't know that his recruitment is going to, or his recruiting abilities are going to be as under as much scrutiny. Excuse me. So yeah. I'm excited to see what he can handle. Like I said, everybody loves this dude. Recruiting at Penn State is different than recruiting in Virginia, and we're going to see what happens at the in the outset. He's got his first junior day this weekend. We've talked to some receivers that are excited to meet him. I mean, it changes your perception of doesn't change your perception of the school. Maybe doesn't change your perception of the person recruiting you, but it does. You get that combination in there and it changes things and it changes how you think about the entire product. So guys like Keelan Adams, Chance Wiggins, Josiah Brown said he's excited to, just guys that were on the radar before. And then he's going to bring along his own evaluations and we're going to see some reshuffling of that board. So I'm excited to see, from a recruiting standpoint, how these things that everybody tells, and it's unanimous. I mean, everybody is saying the same thing about this guy. So I'm excited to see how that can sort of bleed over into the spring.
Do you know, I hate to ask you a question that we haven't talked about beforehand, but do you know what I think he tweeted yesterday. Was it yesterday that he arrived in State College? What his recruiting initial responsibilities are in terms of like, will he help in this kind of home stretch towards the lake? Will he be out on the road immediately? Has that happened yet?
Yeah. As far as I know, he's out on the road. Virginia is going to be, the 757 area is going to be an area that Penn State has been slow in. And Ryan and I talked about this the other day. It's an area that Penn State has been slow in, but it's open right now because of a few dynamics that are at play. So he's going to get out there. He's going to get to his natural recruiting grounds. I also think he offered a kid in Houston yesterday. I think it was. So he's got, he's going to go out and check position recruiting in 2024 and 2025 and get some of those new offers out there. It'll be interesting to see, not necessarily for 2023, because I think it's we're kind of past that, but 2024, if he's got any guys that are his guys. I mean, we saw this when Stubblefield came into the program. We saw this when all the receivers coaches came into the program, guys that they evaluated their prior stops and says, hey, this kid might be better than we think, or than you thought eventually or originally, and I've seen him in person, et cetera. So that's what I'm looking for in the next couple of days and weeks is are there guys that sort of go beyond the overlap of the Wiggins and the Keelan Adams and guys like that.
Yep. My understanding is that the media should be able to speak to him. He'll have a press conference, be part of a press conference of some variety over the next couple of weeks. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to the mailbag. Let's get into the questions from this week's fans.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I got left off the graphic.
Yeah. Yes. Well, okay. Next time.
Maybe next time. I'll get there.
This is atypical. We're switching it up. This is our first mailbag. So let's dive right in. And I know that we have a question from Apple Podcasts, which is where we are really encouraging people who are listening, who are watching to submit questions to the mailbag each week. It doesn't have to be on Wednesday before Thursday's show. It can be any time of the week. Just leave a 5-star review for us. Ask a question, and we will very much try to make sure that that question is a part of the next mailbag show that we have. So
and we are also doing questions from the board as well. So, but anyway,
of course, of course, of course, it goes without saying that
you would think yes.
So, in any case, question from A Hinton 8811. He said, I know how CJF is, but did anyone get an update on Jalen Reed's injury and time frame for a return? Wondering if he will be a go for spring. Jalen obviously left the Rose Bowl early with an injury. And after the fact, what was it, a week or two, had a photo on his social media, Instagram, Twitter, what have you, of him in a recovery room, ostensibly. So we know that he had some work done there. What do you got for us there, Fitz?
Arm in a sling, looked like a shoulder. So that's not great for a safety. That's going to take some time. And I think it's not necessarily the spring that you're looking to here, excuse me, but the winter workouts that he's going to have to miss because of that. There's only so much you can do without an arm, essentially. So we will definitely right now I'm not really expecting a ton from him. And then when you get back into it, you know, even less contact, you know, because of the position, because of the fact that you don't have to run a guy out there for spring because you go 0-0 in spring. So that's going to open some things up for guys like Zaki Wheatley, KJ Winston, who I'm excited to see. They've got guys that they can throw in there. You would have liked to see what Reed could do, potentially starting alongside of Keaton Ellis, but safety seems like a position that they've grown into in terms of depth and they've grown into in terms of talent. I like where they're at with the safety room. So you don't absolutely need Jalen Reed to be back there.
Yeah. I think it's kind of tough for him because you look at him as that early initial contributor right out of that class. He was the guy who was on the field early and they had, you know, special packages for him. very clearly
second in the team in snaps last year at safety, even though he wasn't a full-time starter. So like they want to play Jalen Reed. I was curious to see if he would eventually move down and play the Sam, because looking at his high school film, that's kind of what he did. He played a rover. He was all over the field and played the run very well. But it seems like safety is the spot that he's settled in. So, but you know, Penn State plays three safeties a lot. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see him in a Sam type role. Of course, with Curtis Jacobs coming back, you've got the ability to have a full-time guy right there and sort of adjust the way that you play with two linebacker packages and the packages that they're able to play. So in terms of the spring, not the most vital to have him out there. I'm sure he'll be out there, but they're not going to run him around and have him throwing shoulders at anybody.
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's always a silver lining situation, right? Where you have a guy who you're comfortable with to begin with, maybe isn't able to participate, but it opens up more reps, more opportunities for guys who can certainly use the development as well. Let's go to the message board. We our reliable, trusty Beaverman 72 brings us a question in the linebacker room. Two questions. Will Curtis Jacobs move back to Sam or remain at the will, or excuse me, in the box? How does Keon Wiley fit into the picture? He's assuming will.
You know, checked in with some people about this about a week or two ago. And right now, given how successful they were with Abdul Carter at the will and Curtis Jacobs at the Sam, you know, I would expect that to stick. Jacobs so much more comfortable at the Sam. Like, there's no question whatsoever. The only thing would be is like, that is your base defense, or when you go to a two linebacker set, they like to keep the mic out there and they like to keep the will out there and take the Sam off the field, add a safety, add another corner or what have you. So, you know, traditionally you would probably see Abdul Carter as a mic and Curtis Jacobs as a Sam, but given the off season that they have to work with it, given that Manny Diaz knows his personnel, like I would expect Carter to be a will and Jacobs to be a Sam, and you feel pretty good about that tandem right there. And like I said, they can work around this. They can make it like when we were talking in September about them trying to get these two on the field at the same time, they didn't have the time to work on it. They didn't have the time to put, especially for Abdul, who was just a freshman trying to soak everything in. They didn't have the time to make that one work. You've got an off season to make that one work. And this is, I think, clearly how your defense functions at its highest point. So, I'm expecting him to be back at the Sam, but that's a conversation that they're going to have all offseason. And I'm excited to see how they use those guys, because you put that kind of speed and that kind of talent out on the outside, you've got some good things happen. I know there's questions about Mike. You know, everybody wants to talk about replacing Tyler Elston and Kobe King before they can take another snap and sending them off to the transfer portal and all that kind of stuff. But like, that's what I'm expecting right now, is expect those two guys to be back in the middle. You know, if
Fitz
tried to make, what's that?
Don't step on the next question. You're killing me.
Yeah. Okay. So Keon Wiley played Mike this year. He's got to get bigger. There's no question about it. But he did some nice things this year. You know, he had the sack in the Rose Bowl. He got there and played Mike. So he's a box guy. Whether you want to pin him into as a Mike or as a Will, I don't know. To be honest with you, seeing what he did in high school as essentially an edge rusher, I would lean Will at this in this instance, but he's got a long way to go in terms of putting on size and getting there. And he's not your traditional 6'2", 235-pound Mike. Like, he's a different kind of Mike. So that's why I would lean to Will, but he played Mike this year and he played it pretty well on the scout team.
Yeah. And it brings into focus that, like, reminder, Abdul Carter is the anomaly here, right?
Yes.
Like the guy that's able to get on the field and do the type of things and be ready at the level that he was is not typical, and probably the expectation should be reasonable and adjusted for everyone else based on that.
All people
know, all Micah humans.
Parsons, Abdul Carter. Yeah, I mean, that he just kind of blew that one up, didn't he? Like, he came in, I remember talking to people in August, actually it was probably before August, talking about that potential spot. And I'm like, so Budden? And they're like, no, like, it's going to be Abdul Carter and he's going to make a run. And like, I don't want to say it's a log jam, but you had Jacobs and Carter there, and you had to figure out a way to get both those guys on the field. They eventually did it. And I will say this too, Carter's got a ways to go, like in terms of figuring out what he needs to do to play it as most efficient. He's got some things to work on, but there's just so much to work with that it's really exciting to see him in an off season, him develop and him, you know, get where he needs to get as an athlete. Because I mean, that's a first round pick right there. That's a sky's the limit type guy as a linebacker.
Yep. Let's stay in the position and go where you were going anyway. RMW5591 asks, what's our confidence level at Mike linebacker at this point? Is there any chance we could be looking to the portal next spring for an addition here? And by next spring, I assume he means May, right?
Yeah.
Didn't seem like we were looking at all in the previous transfer portal window, yet this seems to be a position where the team could use some help. What say you?
Yeah, I doubt they bring in a transfer. Like, you've got a lot of numbers. You've replenished those numbers very well. And you've got two guys coming back, one that was a full-time starter and one that you could potentially label as a starter in Kobe King. I understand the consternation here because those guys both have to get better. I think they will. You know, there's always that thing that we forget about, that guys improve over their career, or they'll be replaced. So I don't think it comes through the transfer portal. And to be honest with you, you're not gonna be able to sell a transfer portal spot. I mean, I know what Omar Spates went in from Oregon State a couple of weeks ago, kid originally from Philly. That wasn't happening. Like, that was not realistic. You can't look at this group and say there are three starters coming back, like, and you're not going to bring in a starting caliber middle linebacker. It's just not how it works. So that's my piece with that. Those guys have to get better. Absolutely have to get better. But I don't think you're going to find a replacement off of the roster right now.
Yeah. I think that it's what's lost in the conversation is, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but they did get better. Like, I mean, I don't think that there was really any doubt or any question that from two seasons ago to this past season, there was improvement there. Tyler Elsdon was in position to make plays. They didn't always happen, right? I mean, when you miss a tackle, it becomes glaring. It sticks in people's minds. And I think that that's the one thing that stands out to me after the season is people immediately kind of harp on those missed opportunities, but there was other steady, solid play there. I don't think that Penn State's coaching staff was blowing smoke really all season, talking about how Kobe King was settling in, how he was starting to get it, how Tyler Elsdon continued to take some strides. So, you know, give him another offseason, see what happens.
So two plays this year, and this is it. This is basically it with Tyler Elsdon. The crossing route against Purdue in the season opener, you know, like, he got burnt. He's not a fast guy. He's not a guy that you want covering a crossing route. He got burnt, and people overreacted to that. In the Rose Bowl, that touchdown where he bounced right off of the running back. These are problems. I think this is where he needs to get better, no doubt. Wrapping up, I know he doesn't have the longest arms, all that stuff. But you bookend your season with that play against Purdue and that play against Utah, and you're going to leave people with a bad taste in your mouth because you think that that entire 13-game stretch, that's what he did. And that's not really what he did. Now, again, for the 50th time, because I don't want my words twisted here, he needs to get better. He needs to get faster. He needs to get more fundamentally sound in his tackling, and he needs to bring those guys down. As you mentioned, he was in position to do a lot of that stuff. Being in position is great. Finishing the play is what you really need. Yep. Kobe King, I think we did see, like, visual progress with Kobe King.
For sure.
Like,
no doubt.
And he... You know, it might be a little bit shorter in terms of, like, the athletic potential and things like that. And he's a small guy. And unfortunately for Kobe, like, his brother playing lights out does not do great things for him in terms of, like, this perception that people have about him. So, again, both those guys need to get better. But I don't think it's this black hole that Penn State fans wanted to focus on. And to be honest with you, Mike, the importance of a Mike linebacker, while it's there, is not as important as a lot of those other pieces on that defense.
Yep. Not to mention the fact that the two guys that you talked about previously, in Carter and Curtis Jacobs, change the dynamic. They take stress off. They take it. It should change how those guys feel about their place in the defense. It shouldn't be quite as stressful as I think that it was at times for them coming into the season. Just, you know, and it's funny because, I mean, here we are on January 26th, and we're going to end up talking about this for the next 8 months, the same way that we talked about John Sutherland, right? And it will be fine. Penn State fans, it will be fine. Next question.
And I would like to see Andrew Carter at the mic, but that's just me. But
And maybe it will. Maybe it will. Plenty of time to figure that out. Lions 22 asks, is there a balancing act in taking transfer portal players in the past month when a better player could become available in the spring, or does that become a plus one scenario? Let's start there.
It is a balancing act in that you want to get guys in, especially for spring practice, to get them into your program, to assimilate to what you're trying to do. You can't rely on the spring window. Like it Chop Robinson, amazing addition last spring. But like, you know, that's one that fell into Penn State's lap. You know, there will be talented guys out there, but the market is still the same size, and the demand is going to be even higher. So you can't wait to hang around for that. And, you know, to be honest with you, with Dante Cephas, you know, that's one thing where you wanted one of your top targets, and you had to do what you had to do to make it happen. Sending him back to Kent State in the spring is one of those things. But balancing act, absolutely. You can't just shut down certain positions and say, well, maybe something will come. I mean, they were going after receivers till the end. They were going after defensive tackles till the end. Still looking at other positions as well, running back, cornerback, offensive line, all that stuff. And you can't really do anything but hope and back channel, you know, before the spring is there. So that's kind of where you're at with that. Take who you can get now, because these are the guys that are going to go through your spring practice, go through your winter workouts, get ingrained in that program, and then treat the May window as something where you're, you know, essentially a plus one, as this guy said. It was a good question.
Yeah, no doubt. He has a second question about Jordan Bass being ranked 48th overall in the country and whether or not there had been interest between Penn State and him.
He actually visited this time last year for a junior day, came up a great looking kid. It kind of fills the same role that they were looking for Kevion Keyes. So I think they prioritized Keyes. Bass went out and had a ridiculous senior year. And he's got track times to back it up. He's a really good prospect, really good prospect. Charles Power absolutely loves this kid. Great size, great speed, very productive. I think he had like 33 touchdowns this year or something like that. So that was an evaluation that Penn State decided to go in a different direction. But Jordan Bass can play as a really good, really good player. And you'll have these guys. I mean, you'll have a bunch of these guys that pop up, and, you know, will he turn that into production at the next level? We'll see, but you can say that about all these guys in this class. But he was on campus last year for a junior day in late January. So Penn State had interest, they offered, and they just didn't really ramp it up as much as you would think for a guy that ended up 48th in the country. I mean, he was a three-star at that point. Like, it wasn't, nobody was really clamoring for Jordan Bass to be in Penn State's class. And, how do I say this? I sound like a jerk. He landed at Pitt. He didn't land at Alabama. He didn't land at Clemson. You know, he didn't land at some of these other, you know, big time schools. So Pitt, which does an amazing job evaluating, which does an amazing job developing guys. You're going to see what he has to work with out there.
Yeah. It happens, right? You see guys that take off in their senior year. Next question. Sean Joseph asks, what is the level of optimism staying in the transfer portal? What's the level of optimism that a defensive tackle who could meaningfully contribute, particularly in a space and block eating role, will be available in the spring portal?
That's going to be tough. I mean, you're sort of out there with this whole, like, holding out hope, I guess you would say. The potential is there, but you look at where those guys that will come in after that portal. I mean, maybe you're waiting for a guy to graduate. Maybe you're waiting for a guy like that. It's going to be very tough because defensive tackles are hard to find at every level, and that includes the portal. So I don't feel great about it, but we've seen times that it's happened. Like Chop Robinson last year, you wouldn't have expect him to surface and ultimately go to Penn State, become a player right away. So that would be a tough one, but never say never, but just be hopeful, or just try to be hopeful, I guess.
It's one of those situations, right, where if a guy is, or his camp, right, is sniffing around and Penn State gets wind of it and he is a take, like a very obvious fit, then, as you said, you back channel it, like you figure it out, that's how that works. But until that happens, I mean, what are we talking about? They're not going to cross their fingers that in any case, doesn't matter.
There's going to be more talent in the winter cycle of the portal than in the spring, just because number one, it's a smaller window. And number two, guys want to be there for the spring semester. I mean, that is what it is. So if you get a defensive tackle, you probably got lucky. Like one that can play and right away. I mean, not a guy that you're stashing for rotational purposes. Now Penn State needs to figure that out for not only 2023, maybe not as much 2023, but more so 2024.
Next question. Poncho 570 earns our favorite question of the week. Respect and thanks to all the other people who ask questions, but this is a particularly good one. Who is a veteran and younger player that you're really interested in getting coached up by Coach Hagans, and does he have a certain body type he looks for in his receivers, or should we expect the same approach in the recruiting of the position?
The best body type for a wide receiver are the ones that the best players are. That doesn't, I mean, he could be 6'4", he could be 5'10", does not matter. Like, and this is something that extends to, like, you don't have to have a guy that's 6'4". And you don't have to have a guy that's 6'4 on the outside and a guy that's 5'9 in the slot. You don't have to have complementary pieces. The best complementary pieces are a good player on the outside, a good player on the other side, and a good player in the slot. Like, doesn't matter what size they are. Penn State's been successful with tall receivers. They've been successful. I mean, three of the best Parker receivers Washington. In the history played together as Smurfs, you know? So
yep.
That's kind of where I feel about size. And I will say this, being at the University of Virginia, took what he could get and did with what he got. You know, so that's where I would say in terms of, like, I'm sure he's got certain body types that he looks for, but like body types are the best players, you know. Yep. Like it's you know, Allen Robinson's a great body type, but also Deion Butler is a great body type. You know, the just guys that can play. Chris Godwin, amazing body type. You know, these guys are what you're looking for, and it doesn't matter if they're 6'4", it doesn't matter if they're 5'9", whatever. Beyond that, the question that we really liked, who's a veteran and a younger player that you're really interested in getting coached up by Hagans? To me, Keandre Lambert-Smith, top of the list, like no question whatsoever, like no brainer. Like maybe he expected us to go deeper on this one, but Keandre has a lot of the qualities that make him a potential, you know, like the potential next draft pick for Penn State in that room right now. But he's got some things he needs to work through. And I think that, you know, being around a guy like Hagans, a guy that he knows and trusts from his recruitment, can help bring that out of him, because he's a tremendously talented kid. I don't think there's anyone particularly close. I think you'll probably go with Malik Mega here, but Keandre Lambert-Smith is a guy that is just an easy answer there to this one.
Yeah. And certainly younger players. I mean, Omari Evans, Trey Wallace, both probably fit that bill of guys who have flashed and shown some things that particularly maybe Omari, right? Just give him the opportunity to get a full, you know, another winter workout, another spring practice in the books, and acclimate to that position a little bit better. I think, you know, could be a good stride for him this offseason. Moving on.
No, we're not moving on yet. Caden Saunders is my young guy. I wanted to go old and young. Caden Saunders is, to me, has the potential to take that next step to get onto the field next year. And I'm interested to see how that development goes. And which is, it's funny because I left you wide open for Malik Mega. I thought you were going to make the argument that maybe this is where the light turns on. And, you know,
hey, he has tried, right? Like the guy can
special teams.
Exactly. Like he's still an active part of the team, an active part of the program, it provides value. So I will never dump on Malik Mega.
No, I'd love to see it, because like everybody that we talked to in the program for the last year and a half is like, if this guy puts it together, he is something special. He hasn't, unfortunately, but he's going to have the opportunity with a new coach to sort of reset that mindset. And maybe something clicks there. I don't know. If it does, I'd be really tickled to see what kind of, you know, these practice plays and things like that coming out, but he's got to catch the ball. So maybe a fresh start is what he needs there.
Kate, I'm sorry. I cut you off on Caden. What?
No, you really didn't. I'm excited to see what Caden can bring to the table. You know, moving guys around. Does he play behind Keandre Lambert-Smith in the slot, or does Keandre stay outside? Of course, not having Cephas here for the spring kind of changes some things on how you can do some rotations, but that's something that's on Marcus Higgins' plate, and we'll see if he can work that out.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Next question. Penn State, 2012. Out of the wide receivers in the room currently, who is this winter and spring most important for? I didn't realize we're carrying on the conversation. What do you got?
Yeah, I've got Keandre Lambert-Smith and I've got Caden Saunders. Like, I mean, it's a different version of the same question. I think it's pretty obvious. They need somebody to step up now. This is the window that they are hoping where they can compete for a national championship with a quarterback, yeah, with a running back, with a running game, tight ends. You've got all these pieces, receivers, so important. You need, you want to go into the 2023 season feeling good about your two deep. And right now, do they have a two deep? I'm not sure.
And let's pull back the curtain here a little bit. It's not one, it's the whole room, right? Right? Like this offseason, they don't care who it comes from, right? It's not as though the coaching staff is looking and saying, hey, this is the guy that has to come through. It's, hey, every single one of these guys has to take significant strides, right? Like they have to dial in, buckle down, do all of the things to get there. And really they will take anybody who is able and willing to make that effort and step up to the forefront and make plays for them on a consistent basis. Like that's it. Make plays.
Yeah. Score points, right?
Score points.
It's a fresh slate. Like this is an opportunity for not only Penn State to reset its receiver room, but these receivers to, you know, maybe they weren't in favor of, you know, maybe they weren't in the plans for Taylor Stubblefield. They can work their way into the plans for Marcus Higgins. We'll see what happens. And you remember, Mike Yurcich is hanging all over this. Like this is the guy that, you know, you talk to him after the Rose Bowl. It seems like he's very hands-on with these receivers. It seems like he has particular plans, and we're going to see how that all meshes together.
He Mike Yurcich is call him Dr. Yurcich this offseason. He is the shrink of the room. Moving on. Sykim asks, this is a long one. If you were Penn State's special teams coach, knowing the depth at running back, let's just boil this down. Knowing the depth at running back isn't huge, would you look somewhere else? Would you look somewhere else for punt and kick return to avoid injury for those two guys?
I would, but you make a very good point on this. So I'm actually just going to throw it right back to you in terms of how important the kick return is right these days.
Not important. Not important. It's good when it happens. And certainly Nick Singleton's touchdown against Rutgers was something James Franklin said afterward they had really worked hard on. Like you're working very, very hard for that one opportunity to hit, but the opportunities to hit are so few and far between that it's just, you're okay. And to be honest with you, I think I would be surprised if Penn State ended up going, like, tried to protect those two guys. I don't think that they feel that way. Singleton ended with 14 kickoff returns for the season, right? So that's over 13 games. He had 14 kickoff returns. One of them was for a touchdown. If you can hit on that rate of one out of every 14, you get into the end zone. I think Penn State would take that chance, right? For whatever the level is of him getting hurt. It's just not, you're willing to make that exchange because frankly, yes, is there like data and statistics backing up the fact that kick return is more dangerous than other plays? Yes. Is it so significant to as like totally wipe it from the game? No, it's not. And so, yeah, I would expect him to continue to do that.
I would think so too. There's be interested to see what they would throw else, what else they would throw out there. Some guys that have had some success, King Mack coming in, you know, he's a dynamic player with the ball in his hands, even though he's a safety. And it's really funny because like all the King Mack comparisons are Daquan Hardy, and Daquan Hardy got put back there. And I was so excited to see what he could do because he was so dynamic as a high school player. And I think he fumbled his first one. So that's kind of where we're at with kickoff, but you're right. I mean, 14 returns for Nick Singleton in 13 games, just over one per game, 20 total returns for Penn State. They'll take the yardage. They'll take the fair catch. You know, a lot of these kickers booming out of the end zone anyway, but they'll take the fair catch and take the ball at the 25 because it does not pin them back at their own 14. You know, there's analytics that say that the fair catch moving up 5 yards, while it doesn't seem like much, is a big deal. So I'll be interested to see what Stacey Collins does decide to do here. They've got options there. You mentioned Saunders. You can mention Omari Evans. But a kick return, I don't think they shy away from putting Singleton back there, just like they didn't shy away from putting Saquon Barkley back there. I know it's different special teams coordinators, but like, yeah. I mean, it's I'm not going to say you're never going to get hurt on a kickoff, but like, doesn't really change the math all that much.
Yeah. I mean, when you have a Gerald Hodges that can return kicks, you go with it.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
I was so excited to see that too. Just, oh man. But
he did it well in high school. I defended that. Anyway, staying with the running back
decision. Of course you defended it.
Oh, whoa.
Easy.
Anyway, HBG Lion stays with the running backs with just three scholarship running backs. I mean, how quickly things change in that room, right? From five to three now, which I don't know if that's accurate, right? It would be four.
It'll be four. Yeah. I mean, London Montgomery, like, is he ready to go by the fall? I don't know. But because he's coming off a knee surgery and things like that. But yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, they just have two for the spring. So with Tank and Tyler Holdsworth holding it down. Yeah.
Do you see potential for a position change to have someone come in and bolster that room?
I really don't. Those guys are so much more talented than anybody that you could throw back there in this is a video game move, right? Just take a fast linebacker or safety like that and put him in the backfield and see if his attributes change or whatever. Because James didn't really do himself a service here by saying that Tony Rojas could play running back here. I don't think Tony Rojas could play running back here. He's a great running back, great athlete, all that kind of stuff. But to understand where Penn State's running backs are from a talent perspective, like he's nowhere close to Nick Singleton or Catron Allen. And to go on top of that, it's not like you're switching a guy that's going to start or play a lot. You know, you would have to switch a guy in for an emergency process. And, with running back, the position, the way that it goes, I don't see that as a potential option. You got Cam Wallace coming in who, has to bulk up a little bit, but is a talented player. And there's a reason you spent a scholarship on this guy. You know, there's a reason you spent a scholarship on London Montgomery. These guys are more talented than, the guys that you would probably switch over there. Doesn't mean you couldn't use a guy in a different situation. Like I would have loved to see Parker Washington, like in the backfield, like not so much as an every down running back, but a guy that you move around, a guy that you can, use his frame for and to basically keep the defense off balance. But as far as full-time goes, I know it's going to be thin. I know it's going to be tough to go through every week and hope those guys come out healthy, but I don't think there's another potential option. And again, that spring window in the portal, they're going to be looking for a running back. I don't know if they're going to get one. I don't know if that's a tough sell right there to say, hey, we got these two studs that are just sophomores. Do you want to come in as a senior and be a third running back? That's going to be tough.
Yeah. And to just my two cents, if Nick Singleton or Catron Allen got hurt this year, they were in massive trouble.
Right.
Like there's always a break glass in case of emergency, but the reality is you're going with your guys and your guys are those two. I mean, they will receive the overwhelming majority of non-garbage time carries for Penn State next season.
And Nick is garage strong. So it'll be good.
Gatorade. ZAK4 has two questions for you, no questions for me, which is great because I couldn't answer these. What are the chances of Penn State landing a top 10 class again in 2024? What has to go right? And who are the kids that Penn State has to land? Who will be big in helping land a top 10 class?
It's going to be tough. They've been in that 10 to 15 range. I think they're 15 right now in the 2023 class. So in 2024, you're looking at a couple of positions. You're going to have to bring in, a bigger group of wideouts, especially with a new position coach. They usually get a nice little boost in terms of how many guys they can bring in. And then on the defensive line, and that's been an issue for John Scott in terms of bringing in, these big time guys. Like he's gotten some guys that can play, but he's had an issue bringing in big time guys. And I think that if you're going to use maybe five or six spots of your recruiting class on the defensive line. You want some big time guys in there, and that's going to comprise a big part of your ranking. You know, those two positions right there. Offensive line, of course, is always in there. In terms of like getting into the top 10, you do that via five-star guys, studs. And, you know, is Penn State in a tremendous spot for any of those guys right now? It's hard to say. And those evaluations will be ongoing on the star side of things. But just looking at it right now, it's going to be tough for Penn State to get in that top 10, especially with the 2024 class being fairly chaotic in terms of NIL, like not so much in that one school will do so much better than everybody. It's just that nobody knows, like nobody knows how this is going to go and how big of a factor this is going to be. So I think they've got the opportunity for a good class. There's, you know, certain positions in the region that are strong. There's certain positions they're going to have to go to Florida for. There are certain positions they're going to, you know, go back to Alabama for, Georgia for, you know, they've offered some guys in Texas. So, you know, as you continue to get nationally or go national, you would have to figure all that stuff out. I'll be interested in the offensive line group. Of course, you've got some guys that you feel good about. Your Kevin Haywoods, William Satterwhite was on campus the other day, and you feel pretty good about where you stand with him. But, you know, you've got the fact that a lot of these guys are coming from Ohio. Ben Roebuck's coming in this weekend, the Armstrong twins. Well, Roebuck, you know, you would think that Michigan feels pretty good about where they stand right now. And then the Armstrong twins just picked up Ohio State offers. Like the Ohio State cloud looming over those Ohio prospects is huge in terms of these bulk positions where you have to take five or six guys. Everybody got that?
That's really good.
Really thought you would bring a little bit more to the table.
NIL is really important. If you have more money, then you can buy better players. Anyway, what? Don't shake your head. It's true. It's reality.
I'm not shaking my head at that. It's just, No, I mean, it'll come down to a few different positions. You know, they need to improve, on their receiver recruiting. They got one last year. They need to improve on their defensive line recruiting. They got one defensive tackle, you know, that's where it's going to come into play. For a top 10 class, you got to hit at those positions, especially when that's going to be like those two positions are going to make up 40% of your class. So
how about this to let me, I'll compliment the question. Is anybody that Penn State is good with right now a four-star who has the potential to rise? Like it, like could Penn State sneak in that way by having guys who they already have outstanding relationships with that just blow up?
I mean, that's kind of how Penn State has done it before. Like
Javen, right?
Yeah. Javen,
Drew Aller. Right? Yeah.
These guys.
Nick Singleton.
Yeah. Those guys go from three-star, low four-star, whatever, to eventually the top. I mean, Nick Singleton was always pretty high. But, yeah, you've got guys like that, like Jalen Harvey, like I think can be a really, really good prospect. 269 in the consensus right now. But he's, you know, I think he can move up because he's a really good player. That's what you got to do if you're Penn State. You got to get in there early. You've got to get these guys. Sorry, I'm going through the target board right here. Liam Andrews, I think, could be a key player for Penn State. Kind of on that borderline between, is he an interior guy as a tackle? So that might, you know, change Notre Dame's perception of him. That might change Ohio State's perception of him. And if you're Penn State, you would jump at any chance to get Liam Anders. So just guys like that continue to be on that upward trajectory. And that's kind of where we're at in the cycle right now, is that you've seen a bunch of guys that like held offers when they were freshmen. Maybe they don't have that option anymore. Like you're trying to get guys on the ascent. And I think Penn State's done a pretty good job at that in the last couple of cycles.
I redeemed myself. I asked a recruiter.
Sort of. Question. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all we're going for here. Fitz, that's all we got on the mailbag. That's all I got for you. That's all I have to possibly talk about outside of basketball, which we could talk about.
Kidding. Look at the time. Gotta go. Okay.
In any case, please, if you are watching this on YouTube and haven't already, like the video, subscribe to our channel, get the notification so that it just pops up on your YouTube feed and it all is fed right to you, pumped into your veins. If you have not already, subscribe to our podcast offerings on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Rate, review, it all helps us. Like I said at the beginning, if you want to ask a question every week for the mailbag, you have the opportunity to do so there. We see those reviews. We appreciate five-star reviews, and we will answer those questions. Subscribe. Bluehead Illustrated. Until next September. That's it. I'm Nate. He's Sean. This is Bluehead Illustrated Daily Edition.